40. They ran across the field, away from the growling engine, through the gravel, and around the founder's house. Spikes of pain jarred Eli's back with every step, but after a few minutes they'd calmed enough for him to run without help from Harry. The sprawling structure had two back entrances and a side entrance. Each was chained and locked. In his gut, Eli already knew the only way in was through the front door. At the base of the broad stairs, Harry pushed the badge into his hand.
"You hold it,"
she said. "Why?" she shrugged.
"Faceless men, not faceless women."
"Do you really think it matters?
Do you really think it doesn't?"
He wrapped his fingers around the badge and they headed up the steps. At the first landing, the dread hit. The childhood nervousness and confusion in the pit of his stomach, the feeling of being watched. He stumbled to a halt. Harry took another step and did the same. She glanced at him with worried eyes.
"You too?"
He nodded. The growl of the big engine echoed across the town. They ran up to the next landing, stumbled again, then hit the top of the staircase, almost 50 feet above the road. Eli looked for a Hudson Hornet and was stunned for a moment by the view he had of Sanders. He could see the roof of the Silver Arrow, the fabric store just past it, the movie theater. Harry shook the door. One of the small glass panels rattled. She brought her boot up and slammed her heel beneath the knob. On the third kick, the wood splintered. It tore free on the fourth, and glass shattered as the door slammed back against the inside wall. She grabbed Eli's arm and dragged them inside. A few sheet-covered chairs slouched around the first room of the founder's house. An impressive fireplace stood at the far end, swept clean of all signs of an actual fire. A long, barren counter stretched off to the left, and an American flag stood next to it. Eli had seen many rooms like this as a teen, closed down for the winter until what little tourist trade Sanders had came back.
"Here,"
said Harry. She'd found a set of double doors leading away from the lobby. They were half glass, and Eli could see color and light beyond them. They each grabbed a handle and swung the doors open. They speedwalked down a long hallway with patterned carpet and waist-high molding. A chill hung in the hall, like an overpowered air conditioner. Wall sconces provided light, and between them hung small portraits of men in colonial clothes like Harry's. Eli saw Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and someone who might have been Thomas Jefferson, but he didn't recognize most of the ones he got a good look at. He glanced back over his shoulder and saw the distant patch of sunlight that marked the lobby.
"How long do you think this hallway is?"
Harry looked back, then ahead.
50, maybe 60 yards, why?"
Eli shook his head. He fumbled with the badge. On television, police and FBI agents made flicking it open look so casual. He couldn't figure out how to brace his fingers across the leather panels to expose the oval disc of silver and gold. Words stretched across it, but in the uneven light of the sconces, they either made sense or looked like a jumble of Latin. In the dimmest parts of the hall, they could have been Egyptian pictographs.
"Do you know how this thing works?"
"It makes people see what the holder..."
"Yeah, but how? Do I just hold it, or is there a code word or a spell or something?"
She frowned.
"I don't know."
They passed a double door with big steel push plates and large windows honeycombed with wire. It would have looked more at home in a school or hospital. Through it, Eli glimpsed a long, tiled hallway. The main hallway came to an end at a set of wooden doors carved with intricate reliefs and scrollwork. Eli couldn't focus on any one element through all the thick detail. Above the doors, a Latin phrase had been carved with just as much skill and precision.
Ab initio.
Harry grabbed his free hand. Her grip made the bones of his palm ache.
"Ready?"
Eli nodded, took a deep breath, and held up the badge. They pushed open the ornate doors and marched into the cathedral chamber on the other side. Desks sat in endless rows, as did wooden and metal file cabinets, the ultimate open-plan office. Standing maps, much like John Henry's, appeared here and there. Eli's gaze followed the maps up and found chandeliers the size of swimming pools and a spiderweb of clear pipes suspended above it all,
As he stared, something whizzed through one of the pneumatic tubes and vanished into the distance. Harry squeezed his hand and they stepped away from the doors deeper into the room. Eli's gaze drifted back to ground level in time to pass a broad table covered with a huge map. The people around the table moved small models and tokens with long sticks. Not people, he realized. Faceless men. They sat at desks and stood by maps and gathered in small clusters with file folders and loose papers. Some wore shirt sleeves and suspenders, others had suit coats and vests. Eli saw short, wide ties and long, narrow ones. He saw a few wearing tall boots and long, dark frocks like Harry's. None of them had masks, just blank ovals of flesh, not even the weak illusion of identity here. He'd expected a few dozen faceless men, a platoon or squadron or something, not hundreds, maybe thousands. Could there be a faceless man for every searcher? Did Harry have it backward? How many others, supposedly dead, had been converted into faceless men? Ones from chains that didn't involve her or Porter. Harry's hand tightened around his. Eli's fingers stiffened around the badge. He lifted it, placing it between them and the room. A faceless man in a long coat and top hat walked by them without reacting. Another one stepped around them, barely registering them as he did. Two walked by side and didn't acknowledge them at all. "It works," he murmured.
"Stating the obvious," she whispered back.
They walked forward blindly, farther into the throng, hands tight and shoulders pressed together. Faceless men passed in front of them, walked alongside them, watched them go by. Harry's fingers tightened around his.
"Hey, Nimrod!" someone shouted.
Eli's neck stiffened and the edges of the leather badge case bit his fingers as they clenched around it. His pace stumbled and Harry dragged him along.
"What?"
she whispered, studying his face. He turned his head.
"I think they found us."
A clearing formed in the swarm of faceless men, an open space they all walked around and avoided. Eli and Harry meandered along the edge of it. A few yards away stood a pair of faceless men flanking a wheelchair. Strapped into the wheelchair was a man, a normal man, in a Sanders police uniform.
"Zeke," murmured Eli.
"Abraham," muttered Harry.
"That was me," said a faceless man on the other side of the clearing.
Eli recognized that voice, too. He fought the urge to turn and look.
"Damn straight it was, moron," snarled Zeke. "Hitting a guy in a wheelchair? What the fuck's wrong with you? Watch where you're going."
Harry tightened her grip and pulled. He glanced at the knot of faceless men once more, and then let her lead him back into the crowd. He stepped up to her side and held the badge out in front of them. A faceless man at a desk turned his head to them as they walked past, then returned his attention to his paperwork. Eli looked back as they passed a long cabinet of pigeonholes stuffed with envelopes. The far wall had almost vanished in the dim light. It had to be close to half a mile away.
"Wait," he said.
Harry took another two steps before she stopped.
"What?"
He looked back again, then leaned in close to her.
"We've been walking pretty much in a straight line from the lobby."
She nodded.
"That first hallway, the main hall, was about 50 yards. And this room's gotta be almost 1,000 feet across, maybe more."
She glanced around them.
"Yes?"
Eli looked at the room.
"The Founder's house isn't that big," he said. "If we've walked a quarter mile, we should be out the back door and somewhere in the baseball field. We might even be past the first base line."
"I don't mean to sound shallow," she murmured. "But at the moment, my greater concern is being noticed and shot in the head."
"Okay, yeah."
He glanced around the huge room.
"Where should we be going?"
"What?"
"Where's the dream supposed to be, normally?"
Harry blinked.
"Why are you asking me?"
"I thought you knew where we're going."
"I don't know. I've been following you."
"What?"
A faceless man turned his blank skull to them as he walked by. Eli held the badge a little higher and the agent continued on without pausing. Other faceless men stepped out of the way without hesitation, never turning or even registering them. A few turned their heads as Harry and Eli passed, but overall he sensed they had more important things to do. Harry tugged on his hand and got them moving again.
she muttered in his ear as they passed under a chandelier.
Why would you think I'd know? I thought there'd be some stories or something, said Eli.
You've got a story for everything about this.
Nobody's ever been in here before,
she said.
At least nobody who ever came out.
Okay, he said. Okay, let's think this through. Where would it be? Where do you put the most valuable thing in the country to protect it?
In a safe? A vault?
Maybe, but where?
A gaunt, faceless man looked up as they walked past his desk. He followed them with his blank features. Eli shot a quick glance back over his shoulder. The figure was still focused on them.
You're holding the badge too high, whispered Harry. It's attracting attention.
We'll attract more attention if I put it down.
You don't know that.
15 always held it up high, said Eli. I don't think he did it to look cool.
They walked past file cabinets and rows of desks and more faceless men.
Perhaps we should head back to the edge of the room,
murmured Harry.
There might be a sign or a map, and we wouldn't be at the center of things.
Eli's fingers tingled. He tried to flex them, and a spasm slid up his ring finger, stiffening it. The badge almost slipped away, and he twisted his hand around to catch it.
Careful,
muttered Harry. He felt another pinprick. Not from his fingers. Eli turned the leather case to look at the badge. The letters shimmered across the gold and silver surface. It felt like static electricity racing across his hand.
I think we're running out of time, he said.
What?
The badge, I think it's rejecting me or something.
Harry scowled.
The ones chasing us must have found Zero.
Eli looked at the dozens of faceless men around them.
How long do we have?
I don't know.
How long did it take when they shut Porter's off?
I don't know,
she snapped.
I thought we'd have more time closer to the dream, that they wouldn't think we'd...
Her eyes got wide.
What?
Look around, she said. Look as far as you can see at the distant ones.
What am I looking for?
The dream affects time,
she said.
It flows differently as we get closer to it.
He nodded.
Right.
She studied the crowd.
Look for the faceless men who are moving slower.
Eli felt his own eyes go wide. He looked down the rows of desks and cabinets, the aisles created by corkboards and pneumatic tubes. There were hundreds of faceless men, all in suits, all in motion, filing, processing, marching from place to place. Trying to pick one out to look for a particular detail was like a childhood puzzle. Find the difference between these two. A few hundred yards away, off to his left, a faceless man closed a file folder and moved it to a bin on the corner of his desk. His arm swung in a graceful, steady arc. He released the folder, and it drifted down into the bin. Eli's heart beat twice while the file dropped.
There, he said. That way.
Are you sure?
The badge prickled his fingers again. Sure enough. They headed down the row. Eli pushed the badge across his body, keeping it close to Harry. Three faceless men passed by, each holding a clear mask in their hands. One was a clown's face, another looked like some kind of animal, maybe a fox or wolf. The third turned his head to study Eli and Harry. A wall loomed up ahead, the far side of the room. Eli could see some kind of arch or doorway there.
Hello, Mr. Teague,
a voice called out behind them.
Mrs. Pritchard, that is you, yes?
Every faceless man around them straightened up from desks, reports, and conversations, their heads turning to focus on the two searchers. Harry's fingers tightened on Eli's and pulled him into a run. Blank skulls swung to follow them. They dodged between suited figures and grasping hands and reached the far wall. Molding wrapped the archway there, and heavy curtains hung behind it like a small stage. They'd been tied off to each side, revealing a staircase of white marble. It would have fit very well in a big courthouse or capitol building. A shot rang out, and one of the curtains rippled. They ran up the stairs blind, their shoes hitting each step with a whap. Harry raced ahead. Eli struggled to keep up and took some small relief in seeing the top of the stairs only 30 or 40 feet above. Another gunshot echoed in the marble stairway. Harry shouted and grabbed at her leg. She stumbled off the top step and into the room by the landing. Eli ran to join her. The room at the top of the stairs had marble floors and walls. A massive set of doors dominated one side of it. Eli didn't see any other furniture or decoration, or light sources, even though midday brilliance filled the room. Harry sprawled a few feet from the stairs. Her pants were bloody, but not so much that it leaked down to the floor.
"Just grazed me," she said through clenched teeth.
"Can you walk?"
"Possibly."
Footsteps echoed up the stairwell. Lots of them, in perfect sync. Harry let go of her leg and grabbed for her pistols.
"No, give them to me," said Eli, shoving the badge into his jeans. "You can barely stand."
The Colts spun in her palms and stopped with the grips to him.
"Have you ever even fired a gun before?"
"Nope."
He aimed at the stairwell and squeezed both triggers at once. The pistols bucked in his hands and he heard a crack of metal on stone over the echo of the gunshots. The footsteps stopped. He squeezed off two more rounds with each pistol. The noise echoed in the room. One of the rounds sparked in the stairwell and left a black mark on the wall.
"Hello, Mr. Teague," said a voice.
15.
"I see you have weapons now."
Eli answered with a few more shots. The footsteps retreated, quickly, unevenly.
"What's going on?" whispered Harry.
He leaned back to her.
"I don't know," he murmured back. "You keep saying they can dodge, they can't miss, but they haven't been able to shoot us."
"They just shot me,"
she whispered through clenched teeth.
"You were just in the hospital 4 days ago."
"But they didn't kill us."
She rolled her eyes and pushed herself up the wall to her feet. Eli studied the doors on the far side of the room. They had to be close to 10 feet tall, and each one wider than he was tall. The clean, elegant panels held a round disc of brass, which stretched between the two doors, and a simple, old-fashioned keyhole sat at the center, right on the hairline seam between the doors. At the top and bottom, four brass sliders locked the doors in position. He peered a little closer. The doors didn't seem to be made of wood, but they also didn't look like metal. After a few minutes of staring, it almost seemed like the door was painted on the wall, like an elaborate Wile E. Coyote work of art. The longer he looked, the less sure he felt about the material. A sound came from the stairwell. He turned and squeezed the triggers 2 or 3 times each. The faceless man standing there flung himself back. The noise of shuffling, sliding, falling bodies echoed up to them.
"Mr. Teague," called 15.
His voice echoed up the steps.
"What do you think this will gain you? There's no way out of the rotunda except past us."
"We don't have a lot of time," said Harry.
Eli studied the doors.
"I know."
"Or a lot of ammunition."
"Surrender now," 15 said, "and I promise your execution will be swift and painless."
Eli looked at the lock.
"Any ideas?"
She shrugged.
"If I had my toolbox, there's a lockpick set in it, but I have a feeling they wouldn't work."
He reached out, brushed the lock, and felt a hum of power travel through his arm and down to the floor. His fingers jumped back, then reached out again. It reminded him of a low-level electric shock conducted down to the... not to the floor. He handed one of the pistols back to Harry and felt the square badge case buzzing against his thigh. He fumbled it out, flipped it open. A gold and silver key sat in the leather case. One end was a heavy disc covered with more shifting letters and symbols. Its long neck ended in 3 simple teeth, the kind of thing used to open a cartoon jail cell. Harry fired off 4 precise shots at the stairwell, one after another. On the 4th, the slide of her Colt locked back. She released it, dropped the weapon into its holster, and plucked the other pistol from Eli's hands.
"Whatever you plan on doing," she said, "now would be an excellent time for it. Hey, this heist was all your idea."
Eli pulled the key from the case and slid it into the lock. It twitched between his fingers and then grew rigid, as if something had clamped down on it. "I think it's..." The key lunged an inch deeper into the lock, spun around twice, and then sank in up to its disc. It rotated one more time, then vanished into the lock. Harry pulled the trigger twice, then twice again. She holstered the pistol.
We just need to get to the dream, she said. We know whoever stole the dream got away without a trace.
Fingers crossed, said Eli. The brass sliders at the top and bottom of each door retracted, vanishing into the doorframe. The seam between the two doors darkened and widened. The keyhole swelled with it and came apart, just an odd ripple on the edge of either door. Eli looked for some sort of lock mechanism as the doors opened wider, but saw nothing other than smooth whatever the doors were made of. The gap stretched to a foot wide, then two. Harry put a hand on Eli's shoulder and pushed him forward. She limped after him. The air in the circular chamber smelled of dust and old paper and wood. Museum smells. Soft light illuminated a large stone table, almost a plinth, at the center of the room. Dozens of flags hung in the chamber. The one on Eli's left had the stripes of an American flag, but a squat British flag sat in place of the blue field of stars. The one next to it had a familiar array of 13 stars and stripes, and the one past that had the stars arranged in a circle. Eli followed them around the room, watching the pattern of stars change from grids to circles to uneven arrays and back. His eyes returned to the first one and counted. 47 American flags. Despite the smell in the air, all of them looked new. The last one had a dense grid, 6 rows of 9 stars each. Definitely a plinth, not a table at the center of the room. A rounded slab of granite? Limestone? It had to be 5 feet across and 2 feet tall. It looked old. Ancient old. It also looked very empty.